Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Reinbold, and we are going to continue our State of the Franchise series this week, looking at the Green Bay Packers, the Arizona Cardinals, and the Baltimore Ravens, and we should get to all three teams this week, because, Jeff, we've entered a little bit of a quiet period in the NFL.
Yeah, a little bit of a news lull, but there's still enough going around. I think the Panthers being, real close to being sold, I think that's newsworthy, and I don't know anything about the Tepper guy, but it's going to be interesting to see how that affects that club going forward, especially the coaching situation there. And anytime there's a sale of a franchise, it's up, it's unsettling.
Yeah, see, I overlooked 2.2 billion things there, Jeff, saying there wasn't a lot of news, and that was the cash that David Tepper is going to drop on the Panthers. He's going to pay, what would $2.2 billion in cash look like? Is that a lorry load? Is that a cement truck, or is it a boat load? Is it just a few black sacks? I would not know, Jeffrey, but you've carried around that sort of cash, so...
You got the wrong guy, brother, I'm telling you. But that is a ton. I mean, Neil, you look at what these franchises go for now, and you realize the value that they hold. And, Carolina's not a team that you think of as, like with the Cowboys or the Giants or the 49ers. I mean, one of those cachet franchises. Carolina's obviously extremely attractive, location, and it's they've had some success, but it's not a marquee franchise, and you're talking about paying $2 billion for it. It's incredible.
David Tepper was a minority owner with the Steelers in the same way that Jimmy Haslam was, and he went on to own the Browns. All these guys that had a little piece of the Steelers obviously wanted a bigger piece of the pie, and what a pie it is, Jeff, because he bought that team is going to buy that team for $2.2 billion. Just 8 years ago, Shad Khan bought the Jags for $760 million. So, it's a thing where you can make your money back quite quickly. If Shad Khan sold the Jags tomorrow, it'd be more than doubling his money, probably tripling it.
Well, that's the thing that's so amazing about it. There's no end to the revenue stream, or appears to be no end to the revenue stream. I mean, now Shad Khan's talking about, buying Wembley Stadium. I mean, that's where these guys operate. And if you can get in the club, you're going to be a rich man. Look at how Jerry Jones bought the Cowboys, 25 years ago, and everybody thought that was just crazy, the money that he paid. But I bet he tripled his money today if he sold the Cowboys.
Like I said, not masses of NFL news around. One story which broke late last week was... regarding Detroit Lions head coach Matt Patricia. Jeff, a 22-year-old claim of sexual assault as a 21-year-old, Matt Patricia was indicted, but then no charges were eventually made. But suddenly this story broke out of nowhere. I guess it's hard to comment on this story, Jeff, because we don't know all of the facts. I know all I can say is Matt Patricia was very, very adamant that he was innocent and that he never had the chance to clear his name 22 years ago. But all I was going to comment on this was it just struck me, there's no way that the journalist in question in Detroit was just doing a Google search on Matt Patricia. He was fed that information, and I find it fascinating to know, we'll never know where, but where that came from. But just again, unnecessary noise that you don't want during the off season, and maybe something Detroit should have found out about before they hired him as a head coach, regardless of whether he was innocent or guilty. As I said, no charges were ever brought against Matt Patricia.
Well, Neil, it's getting to the point now where if you're going to be a high-profile guy, a head coach, or a star player in the National Football League, or a guy that's being considered for a first-round draft pick, it's almost like being a politician, because everything in your life is now fodder for the media. And you look at what happened to Josh Allen with tweets that were leaked from when he was a high school kid.
Yeah.
That affected his draft position, and are going to certainly affect him in the locker room when he walks in, you know, this past weekend in rookie camp with Buffalo. So it's really unfortunate. And, you know, the thing that we heard here was that it was not a particularly deeply hidden point. However, the Patriots said they knew nothing about it as he came up through their organization. So, you know, it's an unfortunate deal. And, you know, for Matt and for the Lions, it's a, you know, it's just, it's a little bit of a black eye they don't need as they're starting to put their team together. I thought the thing with Christian Kirk the other day was just as crazy. You know, here's a guy right before the draft who apparently has too much to drink and then is out in the parking lot and throwing rocks at cars, you know, right before the draft. And you got to shake your head and go, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone's done things when they're 18, 19, 20, 21 that, you know, they wouldn't do now as they're, you know, years later. But this is, you know, like with Christian Kirk, Jeff, it's right on the eve of the draft. You know, it's, where's your judgment? That is the worry, isn't it, when you see those kinds of things. Same with the, you know, the players who fail the drug tests at the combine. You always talk about them, you know, of all the times you don't want to get caught. You know, it leads to sort of wondering about their decision making and their ability to manage their lives.
Well, yeah, and you know what, you think about it, you're the owner, or you're involved with these guys, and you make that kid an instant millionaire, and then, you know, you're dealing with this. And the Cardinals knew about it before the draft and apparently did their research on it, you know, thought it was just bad decision, you know, of a young kid. But golly, I mean, you got to have a little bit better sense than that. And, you know, the issue is, I think, too, and he addressed this, is, you know, he's a local kid. He's from Scottsdale. He's from right there in Phoenix. And one of the things that's tough sometimes is, you know, your buddies who are 21, 22 years old that aren't, you know, in the national spotlight, that aren't, you know, high draft picks, that aren't, you know, going to be playing in the NFL, well, they can live a different kind of life than you can live. Nobody cares. They're just a bunch of punk kids that were throwing rocks at a car. But you're an NFL player. That you're in a totally different realm when you know, play in the National Football League. And some of these guys, it takes them a little while to figure that out. Mm.
Jeff, you mentioned Josh Allen just then, the quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. Wonderful scenes last week at Buffalo's rookie minicamp when the great Jim Kelly turned up. And we know Jim Kelly has been battling cancer yet again. He's had really quite intrusive and serious facial surgery and, you know, trying to repair his jaw and rid him of that cancer. Jim Kelly turns up to watch the Buffalo Bills, and Josh Allen said afterwards he was shaking. He was shaking because he knew he'd met an absolute legend and that he hoped that Jim Kelly would become a mentor to him. If I'm Josh Allen, I'm asking every question under the book when I meet the great Jim Kelly.
Absolutely. You know, you want to take advantage of that guy's, you know, experiences. And you know, Neil, and you remember when we talked to Trent Dilfer about playing quarterback in the NFL, and he talked about the enormity of the position? Well, think about Josh Allen now walking into Buffalo with all of the weight of being, you know, a first-round draft choice, being the guy that's supposed to save the franchise, and all of that on his shoulders, and anything that he can get from Jim Kelly certainly is going to be a benefit to him. You know, I heard something interesting today, Neil, you know, about quarterbacks and first-round quarterbacks and how a first-round quarterback, particularly the higher in the first round you go, the more impact you should have on your franchise. Mm-hmm. So if you're the first player picked in the draft, you should change the franchise, the course of the franchise, the history of the franchise. And one of the guys they were talking about was Jameis Winston, who was the first player pick in the draft a few years ago. And in his career, Neil, he has 18 wins.
Wow.
So I think that, you know, it's time for him to produce as a first-round pick. You know, Marcus Mariota was taken behind him, has more wins than him, and Marcus missed that portion of that season with that bad leg. So I think it's time for Jameis Winston now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and again, for him, Jeff, just you know, continuing a bit of chat on Jameis Winston. I'm not sure he's a leader. He wants to be a leader. He wants to be seen as being a leader. And that's very different from actually being a leader. You can't just say, I want to be a leader and then hope everyone follows you. I mean, that whole sucking his fingers and I want to eat a W stuff last year was just ridiculous. And you can see the players around him just almost scratching their heads and saying, what is this guy on? I think he wants so badly to be a leader, but you can't just want something and mean it's going to happen.
No, that's right, because I want to be 6'2 and look like Clark Gable, and that ain't happening to you anytime soon.
There's certain shoes you can get for that, Jeff.
You're exactly right. I mean, you can't, you just, and that's the thing that is so hard to evaluate in the draft, because, you look at, let's talk about Jameis for a minute, just as an example, not the best Jameis, but you look at some of the things that were in his dossier, if you will, when he came out of Florida State, immaturity, just a couple of incidents, and just you look at it and you go, well, that doesn't predict well for, being a leader of men. And so I think that the Bucks are getting a little bit of, what they deserve, I guess.
Jeff, I just want to go back to Jim Kelly. I've had the chance to work with him in London. He came over around the Buffalo game. We did a few events together. He is, and I say this about a number of people in the NFL, but he is the nicest guy you would ever wish to meet. The most gracious of men and players. You would not think he had been an NFL superstar. The most down-to-earth player there ever could wish to meet. And Jeff, he lost 4 straight Super Bowls, and I remember the great Marv Levy telling me that Jim Kelly and the Bills didn't curl up in the fetal position and cry. They just fought back every year. And I saw Jim Kelly on the practice field last week with Josh Allen, and Jim has bones from his legs now in his jaw, trying to make up his jaw because they had to take his jaw away after he had this cancer. Cancer keeps trying to kick him down, and Jim Kelly is walking around with a walking stick. He just refuses to give up, Jeff. He's an absolute inspiration, that man.
Absolutely. And, Neil, when you come into Buffalo, one of the, I guess, rites of passage, if you will, is to be around some of those old Bills, and Jim Kelly in particular.
Yeah.
I know when Rex Ryan came into Buffalo, one of the first things he did was went out for dinner with Jim Kelly. And, if you get Jim Kelly's blessing, you're going to get the blessing of the entire community in Buffalo, because he is absolutely, and you know this from being around him and being there, and watching, training camp, he is absolutely revered in Buffalo.
Jeff, let's finish off one piece of news which is going to please Cleveland Browns fans. Hugh Jackson is going to jump in Lake Erie. The problem is, I think they're going to help him out afterwards, because there is a long line of fans queuing up to push him in. But Hugh Jackson says, this was last year heading into the season, Hugh Jackson said, if we're not better than we were the previous year when the Browns went 1-15, I will jump in Lake Erie. He is going to do it on June the 1st. He's going to raise money for charity at this event. And he said he hopes that the water will help to cleanse ourselves of losing. Jeff, he's got a lot of smelly mess on him at the moment. He's going to have to jump in a few times.
Well, let me just say, that's Lake Erie. That's not the Ganges.
It's not going to Lourdes.
No. So, there's a lot of lost souls in Lake Erie.
Is he going to jump out? Is he going to come out smelling worse than when he jumped in then?
There's a chance that he may not even break the surface, because there's an oil slick. You can walk across part of it. Hey, I think
Hugh Jackson believes in his power. Look, hey Jeff, Hugh Jackson survived getting the sack when he won one game in 2 years. He probably can walk on water.
I tell you what, Neil, this is a big year for you, and that's starting it out by taking a plunge in Lake Erie. You wonder about his choices.
There we go. It's going to start off in Lake Erie and end with the Gatorade pouring down on him in Atlanta. There. Let's
stop.
That's your bold prediction for the week, folks. Let's start a State of the Franchise series again then this week. Let's look at the Green Bay Packers. They went 7-9 in 2017. Of course, Aaron Rodgers sidelined for so long with that broken collarbone, and they really weren't up to the task without one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. Offense was 26th in the NFL, 17th in rushing, 25th in passing. They were 30th in big plays created. Defense continued to be a problem. They were 22nd on defense, 17th against the run, 23rd against the pass. Jeff, I want to start on the offensive side of the ball with this very interesting dynamic that we have now between Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. McCarthy coming off probably his worst season, or one of his worst seasons, as Packers head coach. But McCarthy, or the Packers, they fire Edgar Bennett as offensive coordinator. They fire Alex Van Pelt, Rodgers' quarterbacks coach. And they released Jordy Nelson. Aaron Rodgers was not happy about any of those three moves on the offensive side of the ball, Jeff. But it reminded me that no matter what, how big you are as an NFL star, they're going to make the decisions without consulting you. But I wonder if it's left a little bit of a rift between Rodgers and McCarthy. What do you think?
I think so, Neil. I really do. And I think that it's been evident by some of the comments that Aaron Rodgers has made, you know, during the offseason. And you know, he has always been and has deserved the position of that very few players get in the league, where actually they will come to you and bounce ideas off of you, talk about moves before the moves are made. You know, again, Edgar Bennett and Van Pelt, you know, that's one thing. Those are coaches. But Jordy Nelson was not only his number one receiver, it was his friend. And so when you... there's a sense of loyalty that I think has been impinged on in Green Bay. I think this is really an interesting team right now, because not only did they make those changes, but Teddy Thompson's gone, the long, long time general manager. Gutekunst comes in there, and really, it was almost like he felt like he had to put his fingers on the whole thing as soon as he got in there. And I think this is an really, really interesting dynamic at work in Green Bay.
Yeah, Brian Gutekunst obviously was active in free agency. We haven't seen that for many of the years in Green Bay. So they added Jimmy Graham at tight end, and we know they brought along Muhammad Wilkerson on the defensive line. We'll talk defense in a second. But Jeff, as I look at their receivers now then, so you've got Devontae Adams is probably the clear number one. Randall Cobb, who kind of operated a lot out of the slot, when he's healthy, he can still be an effective receiver. I wonder if we'll see Ty Montgomery move back to receiver, Jeff, because they do have those two young runners now in Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. I mean, obviously it's all about number 12 in terms of making this team tick, but do you still see this being a top tier offense? And how do you think some of those positions are going to shake out as we go through the summer?
Well, I think as long as you got 12 standing at quarterback, you got a chance. He makes everybody around him better. But I think really, Neil, when you look at this team, I think there are a lot of questions about Green Bay. First of all, they've never been able to protect him adequately. He gets out of a lot of trouble that other quarterbacks can't get out of. He throws balls that, you know, other quarterbacks can't throw. So you almost get a false sense of security when you have a guy as good as he is playing that position. I think this is a team that, you know, I know they like those young running backs, and, you know, when we talked to Williams at the Super Bowl, he was an impressive kid, and, you know, there's a lot of real positive things about him, but I just don't see, I think this is a team that other teams in the division are catching, or have either caught up to, or are catching up to. And I think this is a big, big year for Mike McCarthy, frankly, in Green Bay, because, you know, there's an old saw in coaching that, you know, you can fire the coordinators, but all that does is that just, you know, that signals that you're on the hot seat now.
What?
And so,
well, yeah, exactly.
They've got to produce.
I couldn't agree more. I was writing about the Packers a couple of days ago for my season preview magazine, and the person I put on the hot seat was Mike McCarthy. And the reason being, when they all start to fall around you, you're suddenly left as the kind of last man standing, where the target turns to you after that. Everything is going to be about Mike McCarthy, because, you know, you have when you have one of the best quarterbacks, not just in the NFL today, but to have ever played this game, and you've won one Super Bowl, I think that pressure starts to build year on year, because I think Packers fans, they'll be glad they've seen Jimmy Graham arrive. They'll be glad to see Muhammad Wilkerson, because the Packers have sat on their hands in free agency for years, and you could level at Green Bay that they've almost said to Aaron Rodgers, go and win it for us, rather than, do you know what, Aaron, you're special. We're going to put as much around you as we can. I feel like they may have wasted some of Aaron Rodgers' best years.
Well, I agree with you, Neil. I don't think there's any question. You know, we were just talking about Jameis Winston. Look at what the Bucs have done trying to help that kid win.
Right.
I mean, all of the players that they've brought in for him. You know, and Rodgers is in. I understand the Packers, you know, concept is, you know, to grow your own, right? Draft and develop as opposed to free agency. But, you know, I'm not sure, and I think that's one of the reasons why Teddy's no longer there. You look at the wholesale changes. Dom Capers gone. Teddy yeah. Thompson gone. Edgar Bennett gone. Van Pelt gone. I mean, that's a lot of turnover. And when you do, just like you said, now you're the last guy. There's nobody else to blame. There's no, now the buck stops at your desk. And I think Mike McCarthy is on the hottest of hot seats right now in Green Bay.
Jeff, when we flip it over to defense, there's a lot to like up in the front three with Wilkerson, Kenny Clark, who continues to develop. Mike Daniels, we know, has become a very good player. I guess Clay Matthews, is moving him back to the outside would be effective. But I'm just looking at their depth chart, Jeff, and, you know, again, the first two rounds, they draft corners. It seems every year they're looking for cornerbacks. They draft Jair Alexander and Josh Jackson. They took Kevin King in recent NFL drafts. That's a real place of concern for the Packers, not just this year, but for a number of years, isn't it, the secondary?
Well, you know what? We talk about Green Bay, and it seems like we're always talking about the same things. We're talking about offensive linemen, mm-hmm. and we're talking about, you know, they've got to find help at linebacker so that they can move Clay back outside where he's certainly a better player. And like you say, how many guys have they gone through in the back end? And it's always the same deal. Now, when I look at them schematically, Neil, I think that what would help the Packers is to simplify in the back end, because Capers ran a very sophisticated match concept defense in his secondary stuff. And you saw them oftentimes be in bad position and give up huge plays. And I think that by simplifying and you know, making it easier for the players, they're actually going to play better. I think it's going to be interesting to see. You know, Capers was a 3-4 guy, and he was a multiple guy, and they did a lot of really good things. I mean, really, really good things. But, you know, again, when you're talking about some of the guys that, you know, when you're playing Ryan at inside linebacker, and I'm just telling you, that's not a good matchup. They're not good enough, frankly, at some positions, and I think linebacker is one of them. They've got some players up front, but linebacker I worry about, and the secondary I worry about.
Yeah, Jeff, Mike Pettine has often had a reputation as being a defensive coach who likes to blitz. So doesn't that put more pressure on those young corners as well, in the same way we saw that with Arizona for years, but they had Patrick Peterson who could shut it down. Mike Pettine's defense is going to hang some of those young defensive backs out to dry a little bit.
Well, I tell you what it does. And Pettine's from the Rex Ryan school. They, you know, that's how he came up. He's had good defenses in Buffalo and actually in Cleveland for a while. One of the things about that, if you've got guys that can play man-to-man is the easiest thing to play, because there's no question about who's got who, and you just, you know, you got to learn to play through picks and some of that stuff. But if you're good enough,
right,
man's the simplest thing. When you play that matchup zone stuff that Capers like to play, now you're talking about everybody has to see it exactly the same, or you're going to get torched.
So it should be simpler to understand, even though they might be under a bit more pressure.
Yeah, I mean, you talk to anybody, they're going to tell you that man is the easiest thing to teach. Mm. But, you know, we used to call it cat coverage. Like, you take that cat and I'll take that cat. That's how tough it is, right? But when you're playing zone, it's like, when do you pass? When do you, you know, when, how far do I carry in my zone? You know, there's just so many things. It's tough to be a good zone team. And so if they've got the guys who can play it, man, is the easiest thing to play.
All right, Jeff, as we finish up with the Green Bay Packers then, they didn't get the job done with Brett Hundley in reserve of Aaron Rodgers. They've added Deshaun Kizer, actually, to the quarterback mix. But I'm going to say, because number 12 is back, because they've added Jimmy Graham and Muhammad Wilkerson, this is still an arrow-up team. I think they can contend all the while they've got Rodgers. Where are you going with the Packers? Arrow up? Are they a plateau team or an arrow down?
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to say, I'm going to give them a plateaued because I just don't see, I'm not a big Jimmy Graham fan.
Yeah.
I think he's a great athlete, but I don't think he's a real tough guy. And I think, you know, the first time he turns one down, you know, you're talking about it, you're playing in a division of physical football teams.
Oh, yeah. Harrison Smith's going to have a field day.
Yeah, the Lions are going to be more physical now with Patricia there. Hmm. And so I think that this is a team that's gotten caught by the division, and watch out because the Bears are breathing down your neck. So, again, I'm going to give them a plateaued, and you know they got to show me this bunch.
All right, let's move on to the Arizona Cardinals. Then they went 8-8 in 2017. Let me give you a few numbers for the Cardinals. Offense was 22nd overall, 30th in rushing. Of course, they lost the great David Johnson to a wrist injury in week one. 15th in passing, they lost Carson Palmer to a broken arm. He had suffered here in London in that loss to the Rams. They were 29th in sacks allowed, 30th in yards per play. Defense was good again, 6th overall, 6th against the run, 14th against the pass, and 4th in yards per play. Jeff, I want to give you a couple of numbers here for the Cardinals because last year, they had 15 players on injured reserve, including 7 week one starters. They saw 30 players miss a total of 180 games. They lost David Johnson. They lost Carson Palmer. They lost outside linebacker Marcus Golden. They lost 4 of their starting 5 offensive linemen. And Bruce Arians still coaxed them to an 8-8 record. There's the biggest loss right now for the Cardinals. Carson Palmer has retired, yes. But Bruce Arians is out and Steve Wilks is in. That's huge, isn't it?
I think so. And, I, you know, again, especially because of the way Arians had that locker room.
Yeah.
You know, those players loved him. I mean, loved him. And, for you know, when you break it down like you just broke it down, Neil, that really shines a tremendous light on Arians, that he was able to get that team to 8-8 in a division, you know, that you lose your quarterback, you lose your rusher, you lose 4 out of 5 offensive linemen. I mean, and you still can get to 8-8. I mean, you know, you think about some of the other teams in the league. If they got 8 wins, they cancel school for the kids for the next week. I mean, it's amazing, and nobody talks about it. And now Wilks has got to go in. And he's got to win those players over, because those were VA's guys. And Neil, you were around them when they were here in London, and you saw just how close he was to those kids, and not in a buddy way, but in a respect way. That they, you know, they knew that he was going to be there for them. He was going to be in their corner. He was going to push them and drive them, but that he was one of them. And, you know, I think that this is really going to be interesting. Wilks has a very difficult job ahead of him.
What can we expect from Steve Wilks? I mean, here is, when you look at the offense, Jeff, and you know, David Johnson remains a focal point of it when he's healthy, and having him back is going to be huge. Does Wilks like to run the football? Is he defensive-minded coach from his days with the Panthers, right? I mean, I assume he's going to call the defensive plays as well?
Well, I don't know if he's going to call them, but I tell you what, he'll have... Every coach gravitates to where they're most comfortable,
right?
And so if you're an offensive guy, you're typically going to spend more time with your offense than your defense, because that's what you're comfortable with. Same thing. So Wilks will have more of an input on defense. Now, what's interesting, though, Neil, is schematically, they were very different in Carolina than the Cardinals were. And it'll be interesting to see how he blends what he liked at Carolina into what they did at with the Cardinals. What's interesting also to me is, you know, the quarterback situation obviously is going to be really, really interesting to watch, because Bradford is the guy right now. But Josh Rosen, and from everything that I've heard, had a great three-day minicamp. Now, can he be the guy that everybody saw on tape and not the guy that everybody talked to in interviews, right? That's what's going to be interesting, to see that dynamic.
Yeah, Cardinals traded up to the 10th overall pick to grab Josh Rosen. For Sam Bradford, Jeff, he'll be wondering if history is going to repeat itself when he was ensconced as the starter in Philadelphia and they drafted a kid called Carson Wentz. Suddenly Bradford was out, but considering Bradford's made about $200 million during his NFL career, it's hard to feel too sorry for him.
No, I don't feel sorry for him because that's the nature of the business. Yeah. But, Neil, his history is one of not being able to finish seasons. And so, you know, I think Rosen's going to play, and I think he's going to play fairly soon. They're very much similar to me because one of the things that, if you remember...
Yeah, both slight, aren't they, Jeff?
Yeah, and when we watched Bradford come out of Oklahoma, the thing that was so impressive about him was his accuracy.
Yeah.
And you see the very same things in Rosen. I saw Rosen throw about 15 or 18 balls the other day on tape from their minicamp, and you could see the accuracy, and you could see why everybody said he was the most pro-ready quarterback coming out. What you can't see on that tape is, what's he like in the locker room? What's his leadership ability? What is he handling the enormity of being the starting quarterback in the National Football League or the first round pick in the National Football League? That's what will be interesting to watch.
Jeff, the receiving core looks a little bit different. You've still got Larry Fitzgerald there, of course. He's 34. This may be his last year in the NFL, but gone is John Brown. Gone is Jerron Brown. You've got Chad Williams and Christian Kirk, who we mentioned a little while ago, coming in. Bryce Butler's there as well. Is that a reflection on the type of offense that we're going to see now with Mike McCoy? Because we know Bruce Arians loved to attack deep. He had Carson Palmer, and so he wanted these speed guys who could get deep. Are we going to see quite a different passing game out of the Cardinals, do you think?
Well, you know what? One of BA's favorite quotes was, "No risk it, no biscuit," right? And that's just the way he coached. That's the way they were on defense. He wanted his defensive coordinators to be aggressive, to blitz, to be, you know, to force the game. Wilkes, I think you'll see a little bit different approach. I think you'll see a more conservative, a more typical NFL approach. And I think the same thing is true with Mike McCoy. Now, Mike McCoy, the one thing I will say about Mike McCoy, Neil, is I think he's done a really good job over his career of kind of melding and blending to the quarterback's strengths.
Right.
You know, when you saw him in San Diego, they would take shots in San Diego. I mean, they would go down because Phillip is a you know, he wants to go downtown too. So, you know, I think McCoy will fit what he does around his quarterbacks.
Let's move over and have a look at the defense. As I said, defense finished sixth in the NFL last year. Jeff, when you look at some of the names on that side of the ball, it's hard to imagine a massive, massive decline. I mean, they parted company with Tyrann Mathieu this year. They couldn't come to terms with him on a reduced contract, but they've still got Chandler Jones, an outside linebacker, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Deone Buchanan, linebacker still. We've got Hassan Reddick. They've got high hopes for him. Marcus Golden comes back from injury. Patrick Peterson at cornerback. They really like Buda Baker at strong safety. And you've still got Antoine Bethea as well. So, I mean, when you look at name recognition and promise and potential and growth, this is a decent unit, isn't it, at first glance?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's a unit that they're going to have to ride a little bit early in the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, as the offense finds its way. And I think that they're equipped to do that again. But when you look at these guys and you look at the skill sets that they bring, they're kind of built to be an aggressive upfield blitzing, you know, not gambling. I don't like that term. But you know what I'm saying? They're an aggressive defense. Mm. That, again, if you look at the Panthers, that was not the Carolina Panthers. They've always historically been a four-man rush, zone team, that's going to play, you know, that's play kind of conservatively defensively. So it'll be interesting to see how they blend the talent level that's there, that was recruited, that was drafted to be in a pressure type defense, into more of a standardized, you know, NFL four down, play quarters, play three deep, play, you know, single high man, but not a lot of zero, not a lot of pressure.
Jeff, as I look at the Cardinals and I think about Bruce Arians not being there, so I'm looking at arrow down. Then I think David Johnson is back though, so that makes a difference. But then some of the receivers went out. Then I suggest that Sam Bradford is better than Drew Stanton. So basically what that leads me to is this is a plateaued team. I don't think they've gone massively down, but they haven't improved themselves. What are you giving the Arizona Cardinals?
Well, I'm going to give them a plateau too, Neil, but for a different reason. I just think there's a lot to be determined yet, right? I think it's way, way, way too early to say what they're going to be, because you're right. On one hand, you've got a lot of players coming back off of injury and significant players coming back off of injury. But on the other hand, you've got an entirely new coaching staff. You've got, you know, a change in the locker room. Tyrann Mathieu was a real popular player with his teammates. B.A., obviously, we talked about that. So I just think there's a lot of questions right now in the desert. But I do think this is a team that could surprise people. And it also could be a team that wins six games. So
yeah, tough division.
I think we'll have to wait and see.
Very tough division, for sure, the NFC West. Let's have a look at the final team on our State of the Franchise series this week. We're going to look at the Baltimore Ravens. They went 9-7 in 2017. That was good for second in the AFC North. And Jeff, it was a heartbreaker. They almost made the playoffs. A 4th-and-12 play. They give up a 48-yard touchdown to Tyler Boyd of the Cincinnati Bengals, and that's it. The Ravens miss the playoffs. Offense ranked 27th in the NFL. They were 11th in rushing behind Alex Collins, who really emerged as the top running back there. They were 11th in rushing, 29th in passing, and 31st in offensive yards per play. 12th on defense, 15th against the run, 10th against the pass. They led the NFL in turnovers on the defensive side of the ball. Jeff, I tell you what, for a number of years now, the Ravens have been, they've not been easy on the eye in terms of watching, is the way I'm going to put it. But they are always competitive, and they're always kind of in the mix. I mean, credit John Harbaugh for always producing, I guess Ozzie Newsome plays a part in that as well, always producing hard-nosed competitive teams. I guess the hope is that they can just put a little bit of razzle-dazzle on top of it this year, because you have to have a bit of that in today's NFL.
Yeah, and you know what, Neil? You've got to give Harbaugh credit, because at a time last year where, and you know how fragile a locker room is and how easy it is for it all to unravel in the National Football League, you know, you look how they finished. I think they won 5 of their last 6. Mm. And had they not had the play you talk about, they'd have been in the playoffs. And that was a heck of a job, because when we saw them play in London, I thought to myself, this is not a very good football team.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happened in that London game was, as you mentioned, Collins got the ball in his hand. And he was the one guy. I remember we were standing on, because we broadcast the game from the field.
Yeah.
And we're standing on the field. And I remember turning to you and saying, at least that kid's got some juice. Now, the question was, everybody was saying, well, he fumbled. But I'm going to tell you what, he could make, he added some electricity to an offense that was just, especially that day, was just awful.
It's going to be a little bit different looking, the offense, from then in Wembley. We saw Alex Collins emerge, of course, but receivers are going to be a little bit different. They've added Willie Snead from New Orleans, Michael Crabtree from Oakland, and John Brown, who I just mentioned, from the Arizona Cardinals. Jeff, I think it's almost time to give up on the Breshad Perriman experiment. That hasn't really worked. That could be a first-round pick that has bust potential written all over it. But they also added a tight end, Hayden Hurst, in the first round of the draft. So they're starting. I want to talk about Flacco and Lamar Jackson and the threat of Flacco's time coming to an end in Baltimore in just a few moments. But let's talk about some of the other pieces they've tried to put around Joe Flacco for this year, which trying to wake up an offense that's, like I said, not been easy to look at.
No, and you know what, Neil, I don't know. I think this is really an interesting one because, you know, Crabtree was a disappointment in San Francisco and then kind of really revitalized his career a little bit. Then he kind of tailed off again, and now he's in Baltimore. And, you know, there's a lot of, when you look at this, there's some really intrigue in this deal because who did Crabtree have his success with in San Francisco? Who was the head coach? A guy named Harbaugh, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You look at who's now coaching on the staff in Baltimore, Greg Roman. And where was Greg Roman? Where did he have his greatest success as a coach? In San Francisco with a guy named Harbaugh. And now they go out and they draft a quarterback much, you know what I'm saying?
We put the pieces together.
It's not a conspiracy theorist, but I mean, you know, Jackson's a lot like Kaepernick in a lot of ways. Mm. You know, he's a streaky thrower. He's dynamic with the ball in his hands. He's not your, quote, typical NFL quarterback. He's a million miles, a directional change from Joe Flacco. But I think that's what the Ravens want to be. You know, they go out and draft two tight ends. Not only Hurst, but they take another guy in the third round. So what they're saying to you is, we're going to be run first, we're going to feature the tight end and play action, and this is going to be Lamar Jackson's team.
Yeah, I agree, Jeff. I think Flacco, you know, since he won that Super Bowl in the 2012 season, has never produced to that level again. I think maybe Baltimore regret, but they didn't really have a choice after he was Super Bowl MVP. They made him the highest paid player in the NFL at that time, but what other options did they have? I think this is your classic Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes situation. I think it's Flacco's team for now because, you know, Jackson needs to get ready, but you know, when you're trading back into the first round because you want to get that fifth year option on a guy and you want to make sure you get that quarterback, it's only a matter of time. I mean, the clock is ticking now for Joe Flacco, and maybe it is a complete, you know, 180 from what the Ravens have done in the past. You know, again, Jackson has been compared as the most electrifying quarterback to come out since Michael Vick. Michael Vick himself said that Jackson was even better in college than Vick was. And if it doesn't work, Jeff, we know that the Ravens have been stuck in the doldrums for so many years on offense that if Jackson doesn't work, and there's a chance it doesn't work because RG3, who is also in Baltimore now, that didn't work. Kaepernick didn't really work consistently. If it doesn't work with Jackson, then, you know, you start again, but you've moved on from Joe Flacco. So maybe they don't have that much to lose in rolling this quarterback dice.
No, I agree with you, Neil, and I think that this, you don't draft a guy, you don't move back into the first round to take a guy because you think he might be a guy someday. You take him because that's the direction you want to go. And, you know, that's Ozzie's legacy now. And so when you look at that, he's going to play. You know he's going to play. And when you watch Jackson, there are some things that you really, really love about the kid. Like I said, Neil, when we talked about him before, if we were picking for a game, you know, in the park and just going on, you take him every time over every single quarterback that was coming out this year. But he's very, 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 very raw in terms of his quarterback mechanics. His feet are all over the place. His arm angles and everything. I mean, that's why you'll watch him have a guy wide open and, you know, miss horribly. And then all of a sudden, the next throw will be into a tiny window and he'll get it in there. He's very inconsistent. What he does do is when he has the ball in his hand, he is absolutely dynamic. I mean, unbelievably dynamic. I think one of the things that concerned a lot of people, Neil, his Wonderlic score was very low. Very low. And that scared some people away from the kid. Now, you watch his development at Louisville. He came into Louisville as just an athlete that they were going to make a quarterback out of, and grew over his time there. he's going to have to continue that and accelerate that development for him to be an NFL quarterback of even Michael Vick's caliber.
Right. I mean, yeah, because, Jeff, we've seen, you know, so many teams have tried this old, exciting, brave new world, and then they all kind of develop back to pocket passers. So we'll have to see how Lamar Jackson pans out. It's Flacco's team for now. Let's have a quick look on defense, Jeff. And I look down the roster, and we see Brandon Williams at nose tackle. You've got Terrell Suggs still defying father time as the rush end. CJ Mosley. And then even into the secondary, Jeff, Brandon Carr, Jimmy Smith, Tony Jefferson. Everyone on this defense seems to be big for their position and have that attitude that they want to punch you on the nose. And that's why they've produced good defenses year in and year out, I guess.
Well, I think, you know, you look at this thing, Neil, and, you know, you cannot overestimate the legacy of Ray Lewis when you look at the Baltimore defense.
Yeah.
They have been that kind of defense. And, you know, Tony Siragusa and Ed Reed and all of them that went through there. There's a way you play defense at Baltimore. You know, when I talked to Kamalea Correa at the game last year, he said that to me. He said, you know, when you come here as a defense, and he was a highly drafted defensive player out of Boise State, when you come to Baltimore as a defensive player, there is an expectation that's, it's not unspoken. They talk about what it means to be a Raven and how to play Raven defense and how physical and how the effort that you have to give and all of those things. And that transcends. How many defensive coordinators have gone through that place, Neil?
Right.
And they still play the exact same style.
Jeff, just finishing off on the Ravens then. Again, I think they're a team that's kind of plateaued at the moment. Maybe a little bit of, you know, a little bit more firepower on offense. Would you give them an arrow up? Would you go that far? Or are you kind of, does it feel like they're sort of stuck at the moment?
I think the draft that they had gives them an arrow up in terms of the future. In the near future, I think it's really interesting. I think that they could be a team that could unseat Pittsburgh in that division, but they're also a team, Neil, if Flacco doesn't produce, that's going to struggle. Then, you know, you're looking at, a 10-6, 8-8 kind of season.
All right, let's quickly wrap up this week's Inside the Huddle with a couple of questions from the mailbag. Paul Goldsack asks, where do you think Dez Bryant will end up? Will he end up in the CFL as a TV pundit, or will someone take a risk on him? Jerry Jones said, Jeff, this week that he thinks Dez can still produce. Well, a team that would actually need some depth at receiver would be Dallas, but they've shown no interest in bringing him back on a reduced contract. I don't think he's going to the TV studios anytime soon. I don't think he's going to the CFL. What's happening here, Jeff? Is it going to be a team waiting until they've got an injury now, do you think?
I think he's going to get signed, Neil. But again, you know, one of the things about a guy like Dez is you're talking about a player whose numbers have dropped dramatically. You're talking about a player who brings an awful lot of stuff into the building with him when he comes. Mm. And so, you know, he's a tough one to sign because you know you're going to get some things that you really don't want. And you're just hoping that production can come back. Now, I tell you what, Neil, I looked at statistically how many times he was targeted, and it's not because they're not throwing him the ball. He just was not producing. And so, you know, I you're talking about a guy that is on the downside of his career. He's not Larry Fitzgerald in terms of what he brings to you off the field, leadership and those kinds of things. He's a guy that's has potential to be a distraction. That's been his history. And he's got baggage. It's hard to coach. And so, you know, you better approach with care.
One last question, Jeff, comes from Matt England, who says, what do we expect from the 49ers this season? So we've talked quite a bit about the 49ers. We've already done their state of the franchise. We may revisit some of those teams to update since the draft. But when you look at the 49ers, Jeff, I feel like there is a little bit of a changing of the guard in the NFC West. For years, it was either Arizona or Seattle winning that division. Now we're talking about the Rams and the Niners, but are the Niners ready for that playoff run this year with Jimmy Garoppolo, or is this the year they kind of enjoy an 8-8 season to show further progress and then they make another run next year. How quickly can 49ers fans expect success, do you think?
Well, I think they're headed in the right direction. I really, really think that the marriage between, you know, Lynch and Shanahan is really good. I think that they get the quarterback now that they want. They've got talent. They're starting to put talent. They're not good enough yet to upset Los Angeles, but I see them as better than Seattle right now and comparable to Arizona right now. So, you know, if you can get to that level, you got a chance. And I think San Francisco's headed in the right direction.
All right, good stuff, Jeff. We are out of time on this week's Huddle. Inside the Huddle, I've renamed it just the Huddle. Just the Huddle now. It saves time. I'm all about saving time, and that saved me a second and a half. And now I've wasted 10 trying to explain it. So we will be back next week. We'll continue our state of the franchise. I never quite know what teams we're doing, but I always check in with Nick Pike, our producer, and he tells us, and then he tells Jeff last minute, and away we go. So that's how we work here on the Huddle, also known as Inside the Huddle. Jeff, yeah, until I better stop rambling. Until next week, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.